Session number 17747, reel 41.
One of the things about this time is that I have memories of, and I've noted roughly, that people were bad-tempered, and the seer got frayed, and I was always glad when he wasn't there, because senior officers can be an awful bind under military law. You can't answer back or anything. I noted on the 12th of September that it's a reasonable day, particularly since everybody is good-tempered, and it's only having put that it makes me realise what a contrast this was with the days of jaggedness.
Do you think this was caused by lack of sleep?
Or disrupted sleep? I think that has a lot to do with it, but I think in the case of the CEO, I can understand having, had more senior positions in civilian life since then, that you worry. I mean, you want to get things right, and you're afraid of getting things wrong, and it does make you a bit short with people, particularly if they are asking footling, the things which you are footling. A new assault is being planned with 7 divisions in the line. This was my latest intelligence. I have some welcome letters from home. Also a note from a chap who'd failed to join the forces in a civilian air ministry job. In fact, though he didn't tell me, he told me he was in the air ministry. In fact, he was at Bletchley. That's where he'd gone.
It was code breaking then.
Yes, that's right. On the 13th, Wednesday, 13th of September, we moved to a place called Sale Duccio and joined 167 Brigade again. Presumably we had been resting up and recuperating slightly separately from them. We didn't have to be in touch with them necessarily unless we were in action. So we joined them again. Moved move up later across the river. I'm not sure what river it was. I don't think it was the Rubicon, but it was very near the Rubicon. And it was a pretty nasty day. Sorry.
I presume you would have mentioned if it had been the Rubicon, it would have...
I think I do mention somewhere when we crossed the Rubicon.
Yes.
I crossed again a couple of years ago when we went on a holiday to Italy, and it is a very minor stream.
Exactly, yes.
But this was quite a day. I've put move up later across the river, not very pleasant. And then hear that Colonel Zambro, who turned me out of bed yesterday, has been killed by a shell whilst on reconnaissance. He went out to meet the infantry battalion commanders at a well-marked crossroads, which is an obvious target. And he was killed by a direct hit.
Was this, do you think, just a speculative shell, or was it
I thought it was speculative. If they fired one at irregular intervals, they were going to hit something at that point.
At some stage.
At some stage. But it was a silly place to have met. One can see why. It was easily identifiable, and let us meet there. It was not likely to result in a mismatch. You were likely to get there, but... to be blown to bits when it happened, as he was. That was... I remember his driver, who was a very doughty individual, being totally shattered by this.
Was his driver with him at the time?
He was with him, yes. And he came back absolutely shattered, trembling and shaking in tears, and... it was a day or two before he got back to anything like normality.
Was there anything you could do to help him overcome his shock?
Well, I was probably the officer closest to him, because I'd been with him, as had the colonel been, there's nothing you can do except follow your instincts and try to offer comfort and offer some of your whiskey ration. And a youngish man in that position, once he's got over the physical shock of seeing this happen, which must have been frightful, soon tends to recover. It isn't esprit de corps, but it's just getting used to tragedy, which conditions people to it to an extent and hardens people. You don't get, I mean, you remain soft at the core, but the situation of being with other people who are acting relatively normally makes you act relatively normally.
Had this chap been with the Colonel on a long-term basis?
Well, he'd been with him since the Colonel joined us, at just before Anzio. So, although in terms of months, this was only the end of January through to September, which is 8 months. I mean, it seemed an eternity. We had been through the Anzio bridgehead. We'd spent this time in the Middle East in Italy. We'd come back, and he'd been driving the Colonel every mile of all of these different journeys. And I had heard the Colonel being very bad-tempered with me. I felt very sorry for the chap, who's very... You know, if he went over a bump in the road, it was his fault, so to speak. So, I mean, he had nothing specially to be grateful for to the Colonel, but they had become attached. People do. People can hate each other and love each other at the same time in war.
And in marriage as well.
And in marriage, yes. I was going to say, is this true in the civil service? To an extent, yes. I still meet up with some people I had little time for at intervals during my civilian career, but we get on well together. There is a... It's a sort of... Almost, I don't know where the term love-hate came from, but there is some truth in it. Certainly there was in the war. Anyway, the CO2, second-in-command, comes up from RHQ to take over my forward tactical headquarters, where we have an upstairs room in a house facing the enemy. I've noted here the CO's driver is very upset indeed. And then the attack goes in. After all, this was the prelude where Colonel Zamora had gone forward to discuss the attack, and his death didn't in any way affect the attack going in. And indeed it went in that night to the river Marano, M-A-R-A-N-O, and from all accounts it seems to be going pretty successfully. And indeed on the following day, Tuesday the 14th, we took 800 prisoners yesterday. This must have been 167 Brigade, or the division, I'm not sure which. Probably the division, 800 would have been far too much for the brigade to have taken.
It sounds like a very substantial bag of
it
prisoners.
It was quite a haul, yes. And one prisoner brings in a marked map, and we promptly shell his gun positions.
So he was a gunner?
Well, he's either a gunner or... yes, he probably was an observation post chap. Yeah. That's right.
An FOO with his...
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yes, you're quite right. I was thinking it could have been an infantry company commander, but more likely a gunner, as you say.
Do you remember seeing these prisoners? And
we saw them straggling through, yes. Mm. We didn't harbour any of them. You know, we didn't pen them in or anything like that. But we were quite accustomed to seeing prisoners when this sort of thing happened. I remember seeing my first prisoners way back in the Salerno bridgehead when you got people from Hitler's crack divisions... with one or two very arrogant prisoners who stood to attention and refused to comment, refused to acknowledge any question put to them. And, you know, they struck one as being the archetypal arrogant swine one had been led to expect to see.
What about these chaps up from the Gothic line
these,
of Marano?
I think the war had been going on too long for people to be like that any longer. I mean, the Salerno thing, they were facing an enemy for the first time. They were filled with the Hitler credo and their own invincibility, and regarded it as an unfortunate affront to have been captured at all, but we were all a bit older and wiser, Germans as well as Brits, by this time. The second in command is in his usual energetic form when he's acting up as colonel. It seemed to give him a shot of adrenaline to be acting up, and after all, this is the third time, you see, we had lost Colonel McCracken only 9 months ago in December 43. We had lost the colonel who replaced him and who'd had some misfortune with his where the gunfire fell, and he'd replaced him, and now he'd replaced Colonel Zambra. So this is three times within 9 months that he had been
in command,
made up as acting CO. And it would be less than human if he hadn't wondered whether he might be upped, promoted and
he's substantive.
Yes. That's right. We hear the Americans have entered Germany near Aachen. We get a few shells, but are now reasonably well behind the forward defensive lines. The infantry had gone forward, totally exhausted. And I fall asleep by the telephone at 1 a.m. whilst I'm on duty. Thus, I wake up late to wake up the CO to take his turn. And there's a hell of an officious row because I had drowsed off by the telephone. Instead of waking him at whatever it was, 4:30, I hadn't woken him until 5:30, and there being no possibility of turning the clock back, you realise that you are in trouble. And I was, in theory, I suppose I could have been shot, but in fact, we just had a row. You can't stay awake indefinitely, even though it's a military offence to go to sleep. Nature takes over, particularly when the telephones are completely dead, as these were. A phone call, of course, would have woken me up, but there were no phone calls. He was sitting literally, in camp chairs. He was on a camp bed, I was in camp chair, and you change positions.
He wasn't grateful for having an extra hour of sleep then?
Oh, far from it. No, he relished every moment of being acting commanding officer and would have done that in his sleep at all if he could. But the next morning, and this is only, my goodness, things moved quickly. It's 2 days after Colonel Zambra died, less than 2 days, in fact. A new colonel arrived suddenly, Colonel Sinclair, and who was, I think, a cousin of Sir Archibald Sinclair, the Liberal leader. I think he was a man, tall, very tall, sparsely built, Scotsman, I would guess, educated in England. He didn't have a broad Scottish accent or anything. I think he was a bachelor because he was devoted to and constantly in correspondence with his mother.
Was he a regular officer?
Yes, he was a regular. Mm. He was a regular. More of him anon, as they say. But I've put, this was to the obvious surprise and disappointment of Harry Churchill, the second in command, and I've put in brackets, query the regulars looking after their own, which is probably true. Then we have to move, once again, nearly up to the four defensive lines, where there are colossal visible scenes of devastation and carnage beyond the San Sabino Ridge. This would mean wrecked vehicles and signs of fire and demolished cottages and heaps of tanks knocked out. So there had obviously been a major tank battle.
I wish I knew which tank
regiment this was, but sorry.
Presumably this would be on more level ground.
Yes, it must have been on relatively level ground for the tanks to be in action at all.
So you're not any longer in mountains as such?
No, we're getting, as I surmised earlier, once we moved nearer to the coast, we were moving to something flatter, very much flatter. I mean, if one looks at the map of Italy at this point, you'll see the contour lines begin to diminish.
You're coming up to the Po Valley, to the end of the mountains.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Or at least, if not to the Po Valley, at least to the Lago di Comacchio, the Comacchio area, where it gets very flat, the eel country, where you they still go and snare eels once a year. It's pretty flat.
Lagoons.
Marshy lagoons.
Yes. Did you have an opportunity to see or explore any of the German defensive positions in this area?
Not here, precisely, but on the next bout, I can't remember how long it was before we went and did our thing at Lake Comacchio, but there we actually occupied German dugout, which I drew. I've got a drawing of it, which I can show you at some point, suitable point. Elaborate dugout with stairs down into it and timbered logs, properly constructed ceiling and walls, bunk beds, the lot.
So it's revetted with timber and fitted out for accommodation.
That's right. Yes, even the sauerkraut was there in its tins.
Did you take to sauerkraut?
No, I never liked sauerkraut. I think probably I would like it more now than I did then. It had, I mean, there were psychological overtones to sauerkraut, you see. It represented something alien and hostile.
Germanic.
Germanic, yes. Yes. I mean, it was like I couldn't stand for many years the smell of garlic after the war because of the associations when we had been shelled and had three signallers killed way back in Salerno Bridgehead. That was in a place where there was loads of garlic hanging from the ceiling, and the two became inextricably associated. I wasn't able to touch garlic for years. Well, sauerkraut had the same kind of association. Managed to settle and move into the upstairs room of a house. These houses, I talk about a succession of houses. They were always empty. I mean, the population, so to speak, had gone temporarily and just left their houses. We were not moving into families.
Had they moved out, do you think, voluntarily? Had they evacuated themselves, or had they been ordered out by the enemy?
I suppose it could have been the latter, but of course they were not there to ask, so we didn't know. Yeah. But I mean, they had vamoosed, and understandably, very sensibly, they had gone to places they thought would be quieter. Whether they had moved south through our lines or north, I don't know. When we got to the Po Valley, you will find that we found ourselves billeted with people who had not moved.
Would that be because they'd been overtaken too swiftly by the...
Yes, the Germans had retreated straight through them. That's right.
Yes.
They had been billeting Germans 1 week and billeting us the next.
So it would be a sensible precaution, if one was on retreat, to remove the civilian population as you drew back so that they couldn't actually provide information for the
enemy. That's right,
enemy
take away the
advancing
source of intelligence. Yes. That's right. Yes, absolutely right. It would have made a lot of sense. I suppose it's what had happened. But you wouldn't have blamed people for simply clearing off in a panic when they heard what was happening around them.
Oh, indeed. Any sensible person would.
Yes. Anyway, the next day I woke up to a new commanding officer, whose main servant I was, ADC, Intelligence Officer Assistant Adjutant, Dog's Body, and a new TAC headquarters in this upstairs room. Infantry, we heard, were doing well. And to our surprise, a regiment moved up and through our lines forward, to our surprise and to their horror. Now, this must have been an artillery regiment. Otherwise, I'd describe it as a battalion or whatever. Who they were, I don't know. We may find out. Sorry.
I was going to say, how did you get on with Colonel Sinclair? Did he...
Well, yes, that's a very sensitive question. I didn't get on very well with him at all. I found him starchy, arrogant, and brittle, and almost totally lacking in sense of humour, which was always a minus point. He had, well, I mean, he's probably still alive, so I mustn't say too much.
But what sort of age was he when he took over?
I think that he was a mature chap, but I would, I mean, people, it's very difficult to judge people's ages, particularly when you're a great deal younger than they are. They all seem old, and I thought at that time that he was probably about 40 to 45, but I would guess, in fact, he was probably about 35, 36, late 30s. Colonel McCracken, you see, had been in his mid-40s. Zambra and his successor had been about the same sort of age, a very mature gentleman, regular. But the third one, Zambra, was a regular, but quite obviously in energy and appearance was not more than about 34, 35. Sinclair looked a bit older, but probably wasn't, and certainly would be under 40, I would guess.
Do you know what he'd been doing before he arrived to take command at your regiment?
No, I don't. I think that, like Zambra, he would almost certainly have been a major, and this was his promotion, as it had been with Zambra. But I don't know what unit he was with. I mean, the fact he had arrived so quickly suggests that he was part of the bailiwick of the headquarters Royal Artillery of the 8th Army, which we were now in, that he was simply told by the Brigadier Royal Artillery that he was promoted and should come to us. I may be wrong about his promotion. He may have been colonel already, but if so, I can't think why he would have moved
from one regiment to another. Did he do things in ways that were significantly different to those employed by Colonel Zambra?
I don't think so. My sense is that they were both run-of-the-mill, trained, regular artillery officers who knew the book.
Followed the procedure.
I don't think there was any disjunction of that kind. The disjunctions, such as they were on a more personal level of temperament and the like.
How did Harry Churchill react to being pushed back into the two ICs?
Well, I think he would understandably feel his nose being put out of joint yet again. But on the other hand, rationally, it can't have been any surprise to him, because he must by now have been getting to realise how the system worked. And being a loyal, obedient officer, he would muscle in and help the new man settle in. I've made a note here which has a bearing. I didn't realise I had been so assiduous. I put that the CO2 doesn't know what to make of the new CO, who is an ex-base waller, which suggests that, in fact, he had not come from a regiment, but from a staff job.
Staff or training, presumably.
Or training, yes. Mm. And, of course, I'm the main audience for the CO2's hurt feelings. Always embarrassing, but it's the lot of ADCs.
To hear all and say nothing.
As I found out later, as principal private secretary to various ministers. Yes, that's right. Or to make soothing noises. Still getting 3.5 hours sleep a night. It's just a killer. Anyway, I said that to our surprise, a regiment moves up and through our lines, and also to their horror. And the next day, Sunday the 17th of September, 167 Brigade was relieved by 168, having fought a good battle but with very severe losses. Then, having been relieved, our tactical HQ is dismantled and we move back to the main RHQ, which turns out to be a completely ruined house. And there is indeed a German anti-tank gun in the garden. It's a most depressing landscape, though the countryside is essentially lovely. Very cramped conditions. But I do manage to get sleep from 9:30 to 4:30. I was obsessed with sleep at this time. It was the main need, almost, more than food, was to get sleep.
Well, if you deprive any body of something essential, whether it's food, water, sleep, or shelter, they tend to become obsessively concerned with that particular...
It becomes the priority, doesn't it?
...commodity that is in short supply, don't
they? That's right. Yes, it's normal, I suppose.
Scarcity concentrates the mind.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, we no time or inclination to write here that there are huge fire plans. This to do with planning of barrages and so on, fire plans for the regiment in the pipeline, like those in some of our earlier campaigns or battles. 18th of September, one moves forward. My final night of duty on this particular rota, I don't know quite what the rota was. I was on duty 4:30 till 7. Then tactical HQ is called out again. In other words, we were to go forward as attack from the main RHQ, all ready to move, and then suddenly it's called off again. Oh, I remember this very clearly. We watch the heavy shelling of a crowded road just along from us down the hill, with vehicles in a continuous queue and no possible escape.
This is our vehicles?
Yes.
And they were moving up to the attack,
presumably.
That's
right. They were a narrow road, a complete queue, just like on a motorway slip road, and the Germans had got them absolutely taped. People jumping out of the vehicles, running into the fields and to try to escape.
Was this... How far away were the Germans at this stage? Do you have any notion of their...
Well, they must have been... I don't know, I wouldn't like to guess, but I would have thought that it was obviously well within sight, precise sight of what we were up to.
Observed fire, then?
It was observed fire, I didn't have any doubt about that. I don't know whether the vehicles were mainly gunners or whether it was a mixed bag of gunners and... infantry and assorted other arms, but hear later that Rosen and Bright. Oh yes, it was partly 167 Brigade vehicles moving, changing position. Hear that Rosen, Bright, and others from the 167 intelligence section that I work with when I'm at with Brigade have been killed in this stonk. Rosen, I noted in particular, was a delightful Cockney Jewish Lance Corporal who was very, very bright, always cheerful, but had a private Jewish mission against the Germans. He had no doubts what would happen to him if he was captured.
How long did this stonk go on for? Do you have any idea of the
duration?
It wasn't
long. It wasn't long. I don't know why it wasn't long. We may have got some counter-battery fire onto dealing with it. It wasn't long, thank God for it, because it was a classic trap.
And the vehicles were nose to tail. They weren't moving.
No, nose to tail. It was just simply a queue of vehicles. They couldn't get off the road. There's nowhere to get off. The ditches on either side. At least the ditches provided cover for the traps that got out of the vehicles.
It sounds like a case of bad planning or overconfidence, because you've described two things happening. One, passage of lines by an artillery regiment coming through your lines, which would create a juicy target had the enemy detected it. And then this movement in daylight, nose to tail down a road within sight of it, that's certainly right. Afford enemy forward observation officers.
That's right. Yes, indeed. I mean, something was plainly wrong.
Yes.
Somebody had misjudged. It's pretty. It sounds as though the battle was pretty mobile at this point, doesn't it? On both sides.
People taking chances.
Everybody was regrouping and doing it as quickly as possible. I think it was probably the need to get 167 Brigade out of the line, having had considerable losses in this good battle.